Welcome to the show where the magic unfolds. Technology and art, a story yet untold. From Lagos to Nairobi, Accra to Johannesburg, we're vibing to the beat. Let the rhythm take control. Oh, tech and art come together. We breaking new ground.
What's up, guys? You're welcome to the Tech Arts and Soul podcast. My name is Michael Komlaopari. And today, we are discussing reading in the digital era. I'm doing this with Ni, Ama Ofosu, and Abner. Ni, what's up with you?
What's up, Michael?
You're welcome once again. How have you been?
Super. And I'm really, really interested in today's conversation because we are going to talk about books.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well. Ama, how have you been?
I'm good. It's good to be here. Thank you for the opportunity. Like me said, I'm very excited for the conversation. These are questions I've explored and very much align with my interest points. And it's nice to be surrounded by books as well while we talk about reading.
So. Great. You're welcome to the podcast. Abner, yeah. Everyone is making a song about you. But how have you been?
Oh, great, great. So like I said, I guess Tuesday bonds are special. That's why.
That's so true. 100% true, actually. Yeah. There are several supporting evidence.
Yeah. So they can't stop talking about us, you know. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, I don't want us to have a battlefield here.
Well,
Well, you're welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah, and we look forward to a very insightful conversation.
Yeah.
But what are you reading now?
So... that's a good question. Currently, I'm reading about 4 books.
Wow.
Yeah. But at every point in time, I have one that holds my interest.
Okay.
And so right now, I'm reading a book titled Sweet Tea by Piper Hughley.
Okay.
So she's an African-American author. And this is a romance set in small-town America. Apart from that, I'm also reading a book by a Nigerian author. And this is Love's Direction.
Hey.
And then, so I don't know if I should keep listing or just...
So you're reading all these concurrently?
Yes, but depending on my mood.
Okay.
Then I pick the one I want. Yeah, so...
Oh.
Yeah. I'll just give 2 for now.
Okay. Ama, what are you reading?
Very similar to Abner, like, it's similar process in that I like to have different books on the go. And then I tap into the book that makes most sense to either what I'm trying to find out, or what I'm feeling. So currently I have about 3 books on go, but I'll list 2 as well. So one I refer to as my second Bible, and it's called The Woman Who Run With The Wolves. It's by a Mexican/American Romanian author. And it's about like the female archetypes and their similarities to wolves, in the way they're approached in society, but also the way they behave. And then I'm a poet at heart, so I've always got a poetry collection on the go as well. Okay. And the current one is, again, let me get the title right. I believe it's Black Girl Come Home or Call Home. It's by, familiar? It's
yeah.
By the African-American writer and poet Jasmine Mans.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
These are the 2 for now.
Interesting. Nee.
Yeah.
What are you reading currently?
Really interesting question because I've been listening to the kind of books that the ladies were talking about. I believe it's fiction or novels.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. I feel challenged right now because at some point in my life, I lost my appetite for fiction books. Mm-hmm. And so I've been reading a lot of... nonfiction,
mm-hmm.
So biographies and autobiographies as well, and a lot of magazines and boring books as well. So, but the current one that I'm reading is Meetings with Remarkable Men by one gentleman called George something like I can't pronounce the last name. Yeah, because he's not American, he's not British, he's, I think, from one of these Eastern European countries, but it's really, really an interesting book. So this guy talks about the remarkable people that he met growing up, and also those that he encountered as a young adult and as a grown up, and the lessons that he picked from that. And yes. I am immersed in this book because this is a book where you can actually feel the voice and the experiences that the person is talking about. And as much as possible, like, the author did a brilliant job trying to, you know, make you imagine, you know, his encounters with these people. So you can actually picture it because he used a lot of vivid language. Okay. So you can actually picture the spirit. And I think even though when I started initially, the writings was a little bit complicated, but as I read along, wow.
You got in.
It's mind-blowing.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm yet to finish, but so far my mind is really, really taken. I'm really determined to finish the book.
I need to go to that book.
What format is your book in now? Are you doing a hard paperback or a digital version or an audiobook?
So it's a physical copy.
Physical copy. Okay.
And I actually prefer paperbacks. Somewhat controversial because people love their hardbacks. But I think the feel of a paperback in my hands.
Okay.
It's just I'm more inclined to it.
Okay, so feel.
Yeah.
All right.
I think reading. It can be a very tactile sensory experience, and it taps into different senses accordingly. So part of my enjoyment is having that thing in my hand, having like a tangible hold of language.
Okay. Is it the same for you, Abner?
So this is quite interesting. And this is something I realized that even as people evolve in terms of, you know, their life experiences, their tastes, I realize that I've evolved. So right now, both books I mentioned, I'm reading as ebooks.
Oh.
And if you had asked me 5 years ago if I would ever read ebooks, I would have said no. But right now, ebooks are really doing it for me, particularly as a mother, you know,
yeah.
Because the time I get to read is usually after my kids are asleep.
Okay.
It's either they are asleep or they are away at school. So having the digital book, I can read it at night, even when the lights are out.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So even though I was a, you know, hardcore paperback lover, right now I'm in the digital world and I'm enjoying that as well.
So do you switch between any time? Do you switch between your...
There are periods where I like to have the physical copy as well as the ebook because I don't like to make marks in my books because sometimes I pass it on to friends and I want them to have a completely different experience from me. I don't want the experience to be marked by whatever I've highlighted. So then if I have the digital copy, I can make as many notes as I want.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So I do that sometimes.
Is that a trait that Amma, you also share?
Yeah, I was like nodding along because I'm actually the opposite. I think from a personal reading standpoint, I love what's called, what I term coding. So when I'm reading, I tend to have like three codes. So I'll have like underlining or sentences or phrases that really jump out at me. Just a straight line. I have like a squiggly line for interesting vocab. And I always say like vocabulary, when I'm noting down vocabulary, it's not just words I haven't come across. It's words that I might want to use in my own writing. Words that are just fun, will sound fun. And then I have like square brackets for concepts that I want to explore a little bit more.
Wow.
And for a teaching standpoint, I teach this to my learners as well, because it's a way of encouraging like an active reading. So having something in mind before you approach a book and knowing what you're looking for. And again, opposite to now, I really enjoy writing in books. Again, I think it's that tactileness of it, like having a connection with that physical object. And I mean, I completely understand the not wanting people to have a fresh perspective on the book you're giving away to them.
Yeah.
But I can't stop myself from writing the books when I'm writing. When I read it, I've tried and literally I'll have a pen there and I just reach for it naturally. Yeah.
But you know, on the other hand too, it's also interesting to, let's say if you purchase a pre-owned book, a used book, and you see notes from the previous owner, it's almost like you're having a conversation with the person who So there are both sides to that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And trust me.
And that's an experience I wanted to share because...
Now, what's your preferred mode of reading a book first before you go ahead to share?
Right now, I'm in the same situation as Abina. And that's because I think it's also because of mobility issues. So if I'm seated like in a space like this where I know I'll be here for the next 24 hours, I will want to read a paperback because I'm here.
Okay.
But if I'm on the move, you know, it's practically impossible. And when I'm in motion, I realize that when I'm in motion, I struggle to read.
Okay.
Yes, I struggle to read because I do more of concentrated reading. I want to be still. I want to process. I want to, you know, get into the world of the author, try as much as possible to picture what it's trying to convey.
Okay.
In the book. And so my introduction to reading is really interesting one. And so I got very active reading about books, I think after my junior high education. And I don't know how it happened exactly, but maybe by accident or I don't know. But back then, the American Embassy, Goethe, and then we also had the Ghana Book Trust. Yeah. And the American Embassy and the Goethe, they used to have this giveaway. I don't know if it's still there, but they had this giveaway section
where you can ask them
and take home. You don't need to ask. It's there. So after school, me and my guys, like, these are free books.
Yeah.
And I was captivated by Americans because they have a way of illustrating their heroes on the cover. The cover of the book. And you see the picture is really appealing. It's calling you to come for me.
Yeah.
And so you go for this big book and it's all about like American heroes.
That has something to do with PR.
You come to, you know, Goethe Library, and I can picture some of the books that I took from Goethe. There is one that you have this gentleman, you know, big portrait of the gentleman. There's some interesting title, like something like The Man Who Changed the World. And then you grab it. And so you take it, and then you forget all the other subjects you're supposed to be studying.
Yeah.
You are just best because these are very, very interesting stories. Yeah. And Ghana Book Trust, because they were cheap. You know, so you just go there and then grab as many as you can and then take them with you. But drawing on the example of what Amma mentioned, when I get books that other people have read and they've made illustrations, you know, I enjoy interacting with the book. So whilst reading, I see that, okay, the person who read this book has highlighted something. I want to understand why that person highlighted it.
Okay.
You know, so it makes me go back. Okay, let me take it again. Let me try to understand. Okay, when this person was reading this book, what was he or she thinking? You know, so when I see the person's note there, okay, I also add my own note. There are times when there will be fights in the book. Okay, I do agree with you.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, okay. Like, what were you thinking when you were like that? It doesn't make sense.
Okay.
You know, that kind of experience. So there's a lot of interactivity, like, in reading. But then I have been imprisoned in the e-reading mode because it makes a lot of my interactions easier, and it's very also easy for me to retrieve information.
Okay. You don't have to flip a lot of
pages. Yes. And the other advantage too is that you look behind us, you see all these books. You know, I can have all of this on my device.
Yes. Okay. And coming to that, for Amma, is this, so we have a lot of books now. We have a lot of books available now online. Does that directly mean that we are reading more?
Good question. Yes and no. I think our reading is expanding in terms of what we're classifying as language now and what we're reading. So, for instance, I think ebooks and digital books really open up sort of like a multimodal way of tackling reading. So you have like images, videos that come along with the words. And I would argue those are forms of reading too. I would define my understanding of reading as connecting to something, translating, interpreting. So regardless of the medium of language, I think those processes can still exist.
Okay.
So I do think we're reading more in that we are reading different forms of language. Okay. However, in terms of like focus immersive reading, I'm not sure. Right. Yeah, I don't know if I would say yes to that. Okay. Again, just because of the medium, like the ebook format or the digital format, I think a lot of the times we're accessing digital reading to consult something, to find out something quickly.
Yes.
We're not really sitting with books.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Abna, what other formats of books have you tried? So there's the e-version where you read. Have you tried like audiobooks?
Oh, yeah.
Are you comfortable with those as well?
Yeah. So I found that... I started off with physical copies. I mean, that's how the world started with reading and ebooks. And then I found that at first I thought I don't enjoy nonfiction because, you know, when you go to school, all you are reading is nonfiction. But when I tried audiobooks, I realized that I enjoy nonfiction through that medium because it's almost like you're listening to a documentary. Or it becomes like a story form. For example, Sapiens. I listened to that.
Wow.
And it felt like I was in that world. And you know, that book basically describes the beginning of humanity and progress of the human race and all that. And it was like the pictures were more vivid in my head. Whereas if I had tried to read that fat book, because it's nonfiction, it's like I would have a block in my mind. And I would probably put it aside. But I listened to the entire book as audio and I truly enjoyed it. So I found that the different media for reading, they are useful in different ways. Yeah, and they appeal to different audiences as well.
Amma, what has been your experience with audiobooks or other medium of...
Yeah, I don't tap into them at all, if I'm honest. I think theoretically, I love them. I understand them, especially as an educator. I think they're suitable for different learning styles. So I think that's important. It's important to have alternative ways of absorbing information and absorbing language. Cool. So I understand the need for them. But personally, I don't necessarily gravitate towards them. I have friends and colleagues who will like send me podcasts or like audio recommendations. I'm like, I love you, but I'm not going to read that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to listen to that. And I think part of it for me personally is auditory stuff. It's for music. So my ears are like solely for music. that's how I absorb information in that way. But in terms of like different forms of information, I can't tune my ear to do that. But I love the point you made about the different books that need different modes of language. So I would argue that listening, although a very distinct way of absorbing language, is or can be a form of reading as well, because you're translating, you're connecting and you're interpreting language, but you're just receiving it differently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. But for you, Abna, do you think that these media are encouraging our reading habits or they are a distraction?
So the word that comes to mind is accessibility. And I feel like the fact that we have multiple media also means that accessibility has, you know, it's not as narrow as it used to be. People who have visual impairments can access books through audio, you know, and people, you know, those who still want to read, but perhaps may need it in a larger font, can use ebooks and increase the font size easily. So in terms of us having, you know, different forms of media, you know, literature being represented in these different forms, it's increased accessibility. But then I was discussing with a friend the other time that in the digital age, books seem to have become almost like fast fashion. It's like there's the need to consume as much as you can without experiencing the death of the material. Like, you just want to be able to say, oh yes, I've read that book.
Exactly.
But if you ask who are the main characters, they won't remember the names, you know. So even though there's greater access, we may be losing out on that, you know, depth. Yeah. Like what Amma was saying, we are not sitting with the books as much as we do.
For Amma, so you are not a fan of these of digital
strong Yeah, I guess so, yeah. Go on, sorry.
Yeah, of these digital books. But just in case you've tried it, how do you find these notifications that pop up on these devices that we keep using for these, or how do you deal with it?
Yeah, I think this is my resistance to digital reading, in that a book has one primary function. You sit with it and you read it. So you almost naturally, you have to immerse yourself with it. You have to say, okay, this is the time I'm going to take this book and I'm going to be with the book. Whereas I think with a device, it has so many different functions that when you're sitting with a text, you, like you said, you still have these notifications popping up. You still have, you know, access to search engines, which, I mean, they're great for exploring what you're reading. So it's nice to just tap out of a book and say, hey, this line in the book or this vocab has really piqued my interest. I'm going to do a little bit of research. But I also think it can be quite distracting when you have a device that does multiple things when you're trying to focus on one thing.
Yeah.
But again, to stress, although I don't tap into audiobooks, I do appreciate them because I think naturally I'm inclined to integrating things rather than isolating things. So I think the only issue becomes when someone deems that reading in the traditional form or listening is the one operation, one mode. I think we need to start, especially from a teaching standpoint, thinking about how we combine these different modes of access and information.
Yeah. Michael, yeah. I want you to listen to something.
Okay.
So, and I'm reading from a book.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
It took me a long time and most of the world to learn what I know about love and faith and the choices we make. But the heart of it came to me in an instant while I was chained to a wall and being tortured. Now, I'm reading this from Shantaram by Gregory David Roberts. This is the best book I read last year. And I mean, after reading the opening paragraphs of this book, I was so determined to finish that when I was in the middle of it, I heard that, was it Apple or, I've forgotten, but one of the streamers wanted to do a series, a movie series about it. And I was wondering, okay, now I have about, you know, half of it to go. Maybe I should wait till they release the book, they release the movie so that I'll watch it to fit. But I decided against that,
okay,
because I wanted to finish the book. So I finished, they released the series, and then I went and then I watched episode 1, episode 2, episode 3. I was kind of disappointed.
It wasn't us.
And I stopped watching altogether because the level of imagination that I had, I didn't get that in the movie. So I stopped watching that movie. So I can understand where
Amma is
coming from. And that also tells me that she has a very rich imagination and doesn't want that compromised.
And I think that that's a trait of a lot of avid readers, a majority, because there are different touch points for the book or different touch points for the text and the storylines that you experience. And I think movies try to pack something in there, but you don't get the entire range of what you experience. Now, I want to come to the subject of inclusion. Are we doing a lot more as writers, on the side of writers, to include persons who do not have the ability to see or hear? Do you think a lot is being done in that space?
I think we are making some good progress there because we have been able to develop accessible formats to broaden the reading population. And so I believe those who cannot see, they have a way of, I think there is the Braille system that they can be able to read. What I don't know for a fact is the number of books that
have been converted,
to the Braille system to make books, fiction, non-fiction, accessible to this category of people. But to also rephrase the question a bit, and I want to redirect it to,
I mean, our experts in the room.
if we have seen a good number of production when it comes to African books, especially on the market, because growing up, it was very easy for me to access foreign books than local books. Is it the situation now?
So that is very true. Growing up, you would definitely see more of the Enid Blytons than on African writers. But I, like you said, that has greatly improved, even though there's still a lot of work to be done. Because, first of all, you realize that African writers in the diaspora tend to have easier access to being published by bigger publishing houses than those on the continent. It's still very much a struggle for those writing on the continent to get that kind of global reach that those in the diaspora have. So there's that disconnect. And then that's also because in the traditional publishing industry, there are a lot of barriers, particularly to people of color, you know, writing authentic stories. And so there are even some authors whose books I enjoyed while they were publishing independently. And I noticed that once they were picked up by traditional publishers, their stories
changed
in a way. Not entirely, but there was just a certain thing that was missing from it that, you know, in when they were publishing independently, you know, it felt more authentic. And that's because they tend to feel like they want to make you more palatable to a wider audience. Because at the end of the day, the publishing industry is driven by capitalism. They want to make
it's
money.
Economic.
Yeah. It's economic, exactly. And so they might whitewash you a little to make you more appealing to a wider audience. But I do love that now, you know, the internet is allowing us access to seeing what is out there, seeing what is possible, even conversations between readers on the continent, in the diaspora, in Europe and the Americas. You see it all the time, Book Talk, Bookstagram. It's a whole ecosystem where now we are all feeding each other book recommendations. And because of that, connections are being created and writers are also getting a wider reach than before. So definitely the digital age has improved access, but there's still more work to be done. Yeah. Okay.
And Amma, is this improving our retention of information?
As a teacher, I'm not sure it is. And I've had so many colleagues and I've experienced it within classrooms as well, where I'm constantly having to tell my learners to disengage with the devices and to put their devices away. And I think part of that is also kind of impeding the different things or the different resources we bring into a classroom. Because, I mean, I think as a teacher, I would love to have an iPad or to have different devices that are accessible to children, especially if, you know, visual reading isn't their primary way of doing so.
Okay.
So they can listen to something. But it is a distraction. It is a distraction. And again, from my earlier point, is because these devices do multiple things. They have multiple functions. I've known a student once who he was in an exam and the exam was being taken on a computer. So he finished the exam and just started playing games. So again, like, there is a distraction element to it, and I think that does affect, number one, comprehension, memory, and retention. There've been a lot of studies done to prove the negative impact I think digital platforms and mediums can have on our attention. As readers, I think we lean a lot towards the device sort of retaining information for us.
Yeah.
You know, like, especially if you're reading like an ebook, you might copy and paste something, put it into a document, or you might pause to research something.
Okay.
We're not being stretched in terms of holding that information. And I mean, I'm guilty of this myself as well. Like,
it's like bookmarks, right?
Absolutely.
You never go back to them. Yes. As you're browsing.
Yeah.
This is it. Exactly. And even just thinking about, you know, like poetry, there are very few poems that I can recite by heart.
Now,
like, that's a big thing with poetry. It's some poetry needs to be heard, and if we can't hold on to it long enough to say it, then we're missing a certain aspect of that text. I do think they can be distractions, but again, these are all tools, and I think it's important to remember that a device is a tool, and how we approach that tool and how we use that tool is within our control.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's an interesting perspective. So, you know, what you've done right now is that you left me wondering. So, the classics, Olarotimi's The Gods Are Not to Blame, Chinua Achebe's Things Fall Apart, Chimamanda Safri Americana, you know, for instance, all these books, I think the authors that didn't write them just for someone to sit somewhere and enjoy reading it. They were conveying certain ideas out there. And I'm wondering, someone will spend hours reading this, and the main idea that the book is communicating, the person doesn't get it. And I'm wondering, so what is then happening to our reading? Is it because of the medium that we are using to read, or is it because we have so many things distracting us that we are not really paying attention to what we are reading, regardless of maybe the platform that we are using to read?
I think it's a combination. Definitely. Like what Tama said, so many distractions now. And actually, I personally, when I switched to reading ebooks, I realized that, you know, I'm a member of several book clubs. And I realized that, you know, I would read an exciting line. And if I was reading a physical copy, I would be forced to either, you know, make a highlight in the book for later and continue reading, or put a bookmark or write it down somewhere. Either way, I would have probably retained that information. Because I'm reading on my phone, I just copy it, post it in our group chat, and, you know, discuss it there. And then it's gone, you know. And so what Amma said is very true about the distractions. But also the medium also, I think, is making us, excuse me to say, a bit lazy. Because if you've borrowed a book from the library and you know you have to send it back intact, you will,
and within a time,
you painstakingly either type it out or write it out in a notebook.
Yeah.
And we all know that research has shown that taking notes is part of, you know, the retention.
That's literally what I say that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's trying to find a balance. Like, you have to figure out how to find a balance between improving accessibility to different forms of literature and also ensuring that we are actually retaining what we are reading, so that we don't miss out on what authors have put in so much effort to do. And there was this funny TikTok I saw. I follow a number of authors on TikTok, and she posted that, you know, POV, when it took you a year to write a book, and within hours of it being released, your readers say they just finished it and they want more.
You know, it's like, what do I do now? Yeah. It took me an entire year. It's in a few hours.
Yeah. You want
me to do?
And writing is hard.
Yeah. Especially if you want to bring out good work.
Yeah.
You don't just churn it out in a week and send it out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So Okay. Writers also have a lot of pressure now to meet that increased demand because like they want more. And it's hard to keep up.
So there was a study done and I was reading up on it, and it was a group of parents and 3 to 6 year olds. And there were two groups, groups who read a story via a device.
Okay.
And then a group which just read a physical copy of the book. And it turns out in terms of comprehension, the group who read the physical copy actually were able to retain more information and also comprehend more information than the kids who had used the device. And I just found that so interesting. And part of it was that, again, the animations that are on a device and all the different things that pop up to sort of distract us a little bit. And I would argue, again, one of the first things I said, there's a physicality to reading. And having something in your hand, having that tangible hold of language, is important to understanding what is being absorbed as well. So I do think, our comprehension is somewhat impaired.
But can theater be the solution to these retention comprehension issues? Because I don't know if that's still happening, but in my secondary school days, Amatai do some books, Andowa Changes,
and I think
were dramatized at the National Theatre. And I mean, you've read the book, but you still go and then you watch people.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, you know, as I'm starting when they are questioning you, you picture, you know, on stage and you are able to remember. But doing good.
Well, you mentioned taking time to write a book. Now there's AI. What's your view? Abna.
When it comes to AI, I feel like I realize I'm more conservative than I thought.
About it?
As I am a writer as well.
Okay.
And so, this is such a hot topic. Because there's a certain level of authenticity, you know, grit, that comes from, you know, a person pouring out their own experiences or their own imaginations that I feel like AI may never be able to match. AI is a product of human beings.
So the soul of your writing.
Yes. I feel like science is doing a really amazing job. Because I've seen, you know, videos of, you know, those images that they say are generated by AI.
Yeah, fakes.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're so scary because they look so real, you know?
Yeah.
But I read a paper that was talking about, I forgot what the term was. I hope I remember before we are done. But basically, there's a certain point where the similarities start to become scary. Even though they still look real, there's just something that is missing that makes you realize that no, this is not human and you can't put your finger on it. But I feel like I'm completely against AI writing books. I feel like perhaps in certain sectors, definitely not fictional writing. Fictional writing is, it's an art form. It's like art pieces, you know, like a visual artist who has taken months to put the paint, you know, put their marks, you know, and all that. There's just this humanness that you know, another human is able to interact with what their fellow human has produced. And it arouses certain emotions in you that I truly wonder if AI can accurately capture that.
Okay, let me attempt to change your mind.
Yes, I'm ready. Okay, I would have loved to hear I'm gonna take a swipe at AI.
It's such an interesting topic because it's a very trendy topic lately as well. I was sat in I was doing my master's and I was in one module. And my lecturer said something that just got me thinking for a very long time. And I'm still thinking about it. But she said that there's nothing artificial about artificial intelligence in that it is produced, like you said, by humans. It's a tool manufactured by humans. So, I mean, I agree with her. but I also kind of disagree, because although the tool has been made by humans, it doesn't do a human thing. Mm. In that, again, different texts can be replicated via AI. I think if you're going for maybe more research-based text, it's a very useful tool. It can consolidate information in a way that it's quite difficult for a human to do so.
Exactly.
But I would say, similar to what Abna was saying, there's a certain humanness that is lost in that, in AI. I think especially tone. Mm-hmm. I always find when I read something that's been produced on AI,
you sense it.
Like you said,
like Delph.
The deep fake.
Like
there's just something about it that just screams to you, this isn't human. And I think for written languages, a lot of that comes via tone.
Yes.
I've just played around with, like, for instance, ChatGPT, and seeing how it, like, brings fictional things to life. And I've read it and I thought, I don't know if that's how a human would convey this. And you can immediately sense that. But again, like, I can't wait to hear from Neve, because I'm at the moment, I'm very much in the middle. But I want my mind to be changed. Yeah. So I'm always open to exploring new tools to use and, you know, to expand my writing. So
yeah.
Okay, so the first thing is, for a moment, I want you to imagine artificial intelligence as aggregated human knowledge at your disposal. Okay. Then let me use an example to illustrate this. So there was a time, you know, when we used to do mathematical computations, you know, by hand, you know, and then from memory, you have to remember everything. Then it reached a point where we felt, okay, we have to find a way to improve people's understanding of mathematics and also save them time from doing all those manual computations. Then calculator came in, you know. Today, there are people who are doing wonderful things in the field of mathematics or even applied mathematics who use calculators to do that. It doesn't mean they are less intelligent, but we have had like an enhanced form of intelligence. It also doesn't mean that they are more intelligent than those who used to do the manual computations. So if today we have artificial intelligence that is there to sort of enhance our understanding of what we consume, could the problem then be that it's about how we are using the tool and not the tool itself? Because the tool, I believe there's some good intentions behind the tool, but some people have seen it as something to cut corners with. You know, to cut corners with. So I don't believe that a serious writer will want to use a prompt to write a novel.
Exactly. And
that would be a plot.
And I completely agree with you. But my take also is that writing is an art form. It's different from math.
Agree.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so you can use an enabling tool like AI if you're doing math, because you get through all the barriers or you get through all the hurdles.
Yes.
But writing is different. And so if we are saying that it's going to enable, there's a difference. You, like a painting, right? You can't just give a prompt to AI to run a painting. It doesn't make it original. There's no soul in it. So while I agree that, yes, it's a tool that we can enable our work with, I think we need to understand that for the art forms, AI may have to take a step back or may have to take the back seat.
Okay, I disagree with that. I disagree, because there's a lot of similarities between English and mathematics. So there are letters in English. There are nominal figures in maths.
Yeah.
To get 12, you need 1 and 2 together to get 12. Okay. To get 12 in English, you need a set of letters to get that. So the same principle works. What you can use hand to type, today you can use a laptop or a PC to do that. What you can compute by hand, today you have a calculator to do it.
Okay. Amma, what are your recommendations for improving reading in the digital era?
So again, I was reading an article and it mentioned... I don't know exactly how to describe him, but his name is, let me get this right, Robin Salone. I'll double check on that. But he is the inventor of something called the Tap Essay. And I think digital platforms encourage innovation. So again, like I'm for different tools, depending on how we use them.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is a sense of like innovation that comes along with something brand new to teach you how to do something you already know how to do.
Yeah.
So the Tap Essay is essentially you read through an essay, but in tapping certain points on the device and on the text, you are prompted to sort of have more control of the pace and what is being revealed to you. So what you see, what you hear, what you read. And I think that is quite helpful. I think there needs to be more collaboration between like the digital world, the tech world, and writers. And that's something we're slowly trying to touch out with ChatGPT and AI, but it's not, we haven't yet got a handle on it, I would argue. So I would say that there are ways of improving our readership on digital platforms. I think part of it is also maybe thinking about how we replicate certain movements and certain sensory parts of like having physical books in our hands. Again, like I said, there's a physicality to reading that I think should not be removed from the process. If anything, we need to find more innovative ways to have that accessible to us via device or via digital platform.
Yeah. And then for you, Abna, what are some ways that you think reading in the digital era can be improved?
So this is from personal experience. When I switched to ebooks, I was reading on my phone, like I said earlier, and I realized I was getting distracted. So I got an e-reader.
Okay.
So that because I know I tend to read in bed before I sleep, I'll leave my phone in
far from you.
Actually, there have been suggestions that, you know, you get better sleep and you're less stressed if you leave your phone in a room separate from where you're sleeping. Otherwise, it's like you wake up in the middle of the night, you reach for the phone to check the time, and then you see a notification. So I got an e-reader specifically for the e-book that I read. And with that one, there are no notifications. Like Amma said, you can even set it to, you know, mimic the flipping of a page when you flip the screen.
Yeah.
And so I think dedicating certain spaces to reading can also help. I've also seen people doing like TikTok lives or IG lives, and they are just reading silently together. And I also saw something interesting, silent read book clubs.
Yes, they're like coffee.
Yes, they've like and everybody is just reading.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, so I think we need to be more conscientious about certain spaces and times aside for reading, and that can greatly help no matter the medium you try to
use. Okay. And also, what future trends do you observe for reading in this era? Because AI and other digital tools are not going to be slowing down anytime soon. Yeah. But what kind of trend do you predict?
Okay, so already I've seen that a lot of the reading tracking apps are integrating community aspects.
Okay.
So now you can be in Ghana and have a book club member in the US, in Australia, in Jamaica, and you are reading the same book. So there are apps where you can borrow the book in the app, and then as you're reading along, like you can make notes, and others in the community can also access it if you wanted to.
Okay.
And then you discuss the book as you're going along. Also, I see the digital age transcending these physical borders,
okay,
basically, and creating a bigger reading community than we are used to. And that I'm excited about.
Okay. And Amma, for you, what are the trends or some trends that you think we would see going forward?
I'm not seeing it so far yet, but I'm hoping to see it.
Okay.
I think, funny enough, as a writer, we would assume my primary thing is words, but it's actually images, it's visuals, it's colour. So I'm hoping to see more of an expansive understanding of language and how different elements of language, so for instance, reading colour, reading pattern, can help within, like, readership of, of words themselves and can enhance understanding and comprehension of words and that type of language.
Okay.
And it's, I mean, it's starting to happen with different social medias. So I try to limit myself to one social media because the scrolling is a lot. Yeah. You spend like an hour here and then you move to this, and next thing you know, you spend hours of your day. So my preferred one is Instagram. And again, I think it's the very visual element. It's being able to combine certain text with an image, or being able to combine certain text with a color, and using colors more of an intentional language. So for instance, like grouping information and knowing that this color is associated to that group of information. So I think, again, we're scratching the surface, and I can't wait to see what we do.
Charlie, it's been an interesting conversation,
yes,
roller coaster.
Yes.
What are your key takeaways from this?
Yeah, right, Michael. I believe the future is printed books, and there are multiple research studies out there showing the relevance of printed books in the digital era. And also, I believe there is a growing awareness about the limitations of ebooks, because I can do a vivid recollection of the civil servant's experience in Ayikwe Ames, The Beautiful Ones Are Not Yet Born. I've read a lot. I read that book about 20 years ago, but there are books that I've read on ebooks. I don't even remember the names of the authors. I don't even remember the plot or what happened, you know, but I can remember, like, I can graphically envision what happened in that book. So I believe there's still a place for printed books in the digital era. The other thing too that I'm picking is that there are multimodal readers. There are people that can read a paperback at one point. They can listen to audiobook at another. There are those that can also take their ebook and read it some point. And like Abena mentioned, you know, you have your own strategy to minimize the distractions, because reading is a spiritual experience, you know, because you are engaging with another person, you know. So if you have distractions coming in, you can read the text all right and have an intellectual understanding of it, but the experiential aspect of it will be lost. That's because you are not engaged, you are not focused on what you're reading. And so I've had I wish we had more time. That's the thing when you are very engaged in, you know, on the set to talk about. And yes. And we have talked about books. And the last thing that I want to mention is I loved Abena's taking over. Ames reference to language, because language is very, very important. That is how you transport ideas. That is how you transport visions. That's how you transport aspirations and all of that. So the Ayikwe Ames, the Amata Edus, Chimamandes, Olarotimis, and Chinua Achebes, they have all shaped our mindset. Those who have read those books, you cannot say you seriously read those books and you go back the same. Yeah. There's something that twists in your brain when you read those books. And I believe that in our part of the world, we need more of such, but we have work to do getting people to pay attention. When reading, that's where I believe a lot of work has to be done.
Hi guys, we've had an insightful conversation with Ni, Ama, and Abena. Are you a hard paperback fan, or you are a digital ebook or visual reader? Let us know in the comments. Subscribe, leave a review, and share this video. We'll catch you in the next episode. This has been the Tech Arts and Soul Podcast. Bye-bye. Thank you. Oh, tech and art together, we breaking you.